The dream started early in Livingston. Astronaut Mike McCulley, today in the Upper Cumberland. The Upper Cumberland has a unique relationship with the space program, including astronaut Mike McCulley, who came to live in Livingston as a young man. He saw his fascination grow with both aviation and space as a student at Livingston Academy. Mike McCulley, thank you for spending some time with us.
Well, it's a pleasure for me to have any kind of contact with Overton County, Putnam County, and Livingston specifically.
How did you come to live in Livingston?
Well, Daddy McCulley was Putnam County, and on the old Gainsborough Roads where he grew up in Putnam County, Mama was in Livingston, and they ended up working at a boot factory in Cookeville together in the 30s. Met each other, fell in love, got married, and then in the late 30s, three McCulleys and two Uptons migrated to California looking for work. And Mom and Daddy ended up in San Diego. He went to work for Consolidated Aircraft during World War II. And then one day when I was 9 and my sister Phyllis was 7, the drunk driver got our daddy, and Gilson McCulley. And Mama just picked us up, and next thing I know, I'm standing on the tarmac in Nashville in January, freezing our butts off. Keep in mind, we'd had our whole life in San Diego so far. And that's how we ended up in Livingston. Moved in with Granny Upton and then had some of the greatest years of my life that time in Livingston growing up.
What was Livingston like during that time you were growing up?
Well, it was, I think the population was around 2,000 at that time. The square was the same square it is now. And when I visit, it's not a whole lot different. It was a center of activity. Livingston Academy was in the Livingston Grammar School, were right there in town. I had a deaf mute aunt and uncle, Alton Bradford and Aunt Ruth, and he had a shoe shop in Livingston down where the old shirt factory used to be. She worked at that shirt factory. Mama went to work in the lunchrooms because she was my mama was a tough woman and a tough mama, and she decided to spend her life instead of working aerospace stuff like she was in California in the lunchrooms, first at the Livingston Grammar School and then at Livingston High School. And that was so she could keep an eye on my sister and I.
So your mother had experience in aerospace?
She and Daddy both worked for Consolidated Aircraft in San Diego.
Do you
and
think?
And then when my sister and I came along, she became a mother.
Do you think that's why your tree got bent in that way?
Well, and I found out, maybe 15, 20 years ago, that when we were in the process of moving from San Diego to Los Angeles, and for some reason I missed this for years, but Consolidated Aircraft and the aircraft industry created a new factory in Pomona as part of the space business. And Daddy was in the process of transferring from San Diego Consolidated at the airport to Pomona to the aerospace group when he got killed. So it was an interesting, what's the term you just used, but I didn't realize it until I read a book about the aerospace industry in California several years back. And that's when I realized that Pomona was built to build rockets, I think. And so Daddy was early on involved. When I was 9 years old, he was going to go to work in the aerospace industry.
So what was Mike McCulley like in high school at Livingston Academy? What were your interests?
Well, I loved it. I had a great time. From the time we moved back there and I was in the fourth grade till I graduated a few years later, I loved Livingston, Overton County, Putnam County. I don't know. I was a happy, happy kid. Mama was broke when daddy, she didn't have a pot to pee in when daddy was killed. So we moved in with my granny, out there by where the housing is now on that side of Livingston, little 2-bedroom house, and all the kids had moved out except for granny. And so mama and my sister and I moved into the front bedroom, which was about the size of a big closet. And, life was happy. I mean, my friends were there. I had cousins by the bunch, many of which I still keep in contact with today. The roots in Livingston grew pretty deep. And this morning I was on the phone with Danny Smith, who was the longtime owner of the building center, almost creator. And Danny and I are still close friends, and his wife, Linda. I don't know. It was just a perfect place. I mean, San Diego, I guess, was nice. I enjoyed it. But I couldn't ask for a better place to have grown up than Middle Tennessee in general and Livingston specifically.
Mike McCulley is our guest, talking about his history in our area. And then we're going to get into his career, which takes him far, far away from our area as we continue. Mike McCulley is our guest. Do you remember when you first thought about a potential career in space?
Yes, it was. I remember the scout leader and Cub Scout leader in those days was Stevens, Mrs. Stevens. Her husband Kenneth Stevens became the principal of the high school while I was there. But I remember laying out in the grass in their house in Livingston and watching Sputnik go over. And I don't know that I thought at that time about being an astronaut necessarily, but it was my introduction, like for millions of us, my introduction to space and that whole concept of understanding it was out there. In school, I was a good student, but not a great student, partially because I worked all the time. I had jobs, and because we didn't, my sister and I and mama, the three of us all worked, and we all contributed to the family. And so instead of studying, I'm not sure if this is an excuse or reality, but the fact was I worked a lot of hours and a lot of jobs, and I did my homework in library class, and I don't know. So I graduated. I've been there several times for graduations for Livingston and reunions, and always love it. But a couple of times they've made a point of pointing out that I was not an A-plus student. I was not valedictorian, in the process of kidding me about things, which I love, by the way. But I graduated on time, and mama knew that I needed to leave Livingston. I didn't have any money. My grades weren't good enough for a scholarship. I had tried to get into Vanderbilt and Georgia Tech, into the Naval ROTC world, and failed at both of them. So I graduated from high school on a Friday night, and I think Monday morning I was in Great Lakes, Illinois, 17 years old. Mama happily signed for me, which you had to do in those days. And I was off and gone, and I went in the Navy originally just to learn a trade and get a GI Bill going and go to Tennessee Tech. That was what my idea was, and then I got in the Navy and fell in love with it.
And your background really, more through aircraft, I guess. You kind of came to the NASA part later, which we'll get to, but it was a real fascination and love with aircraft?
Well, in a roundabout way, I went to submarines first when I went in the Navy. And I served on one diesel and a couple of nuclear-powered submarines. And that's when I sort of fell in love with the Navy, fell in love with sea. And I also fell in love with the concept of becoming an officer in the Navy, and that meant getting a college degree. And so by that time, I'd settled down. In terms of trying to learn things all the time, I'd been through a couple of technical schools and had done well, really well. And so I applied through the Navy for this scholarship program, and I was selected. And my plan was to go to Vanderbilt, because at that point I was spending a lot of money on Mama, taking care of Mama, and Vanderbilt was just down the street, of course. But I had worked for a guy in the Navy who became almost a surrogate father. He was an officer when I was a lieutenant commander when I was a second class petty officer, and he was a tremendous influence on my life. But anyway, when I got selected that program, he called me and said, "You got to go to Purdue." He'd had some history with it and a great engineering school, but I didn't know where it was, what it was. And I just said, "Yes, sir." And then later on, of course, I found out that it was in Indiana and more about the school. But it was still not far from home. I could get to Livingston from West Lafayette, Indiana, in a few hours. It wasn't bad. So that's how I ended up at Purdue, almost serendipitously. Just a guy I worked for said, "Go there." And I said, "Yes, sir." And that was how I selected Purdue. Turns out Purdue is the University of Astronauts, both the first moonwalker and the last moonwalker, Neil Armstrong and Gene Cernan, both of them Purdue graduates, and both of them became very, very active mentors of mine over the years.
Mike McCulley is our guest. He is a graduate of Livingston Academy. We'll journey with him into space as we continue. Mike McCulley is our guest. So you're at Purdue, and were you still thinking about space? Was it more about airplanes? Where were you as you went through your college education?
Well, this is another one of those many things in my life that something came out of nowhere almost that changed my direction. So in the summer of 69, when Neil Armstrong walked on the moon, I was just about to graduate from Purdue, and I was making selections about whether I wanted to go back to submarines, which is what my plan had been. But I had an opportunity to go fly with a Navy pilot at the airport up there in Lafayette, Indiana, and one flight, and I got out of that airplane, and I went over to the offices for my scholarship program, and I applied for the Naval Aviation that day. And it was just simply a matter, and Alan Shepard went flying when I was, same day I went to boot camp. I had that connection too, and I used to introduce Alan Shepard, the first man in space from America, and I'd tell that story about when Alan was flying in space. I was in my first day of boot camp, and he would fuss at me and then tell me to tell that story all the time when I introduced him. So between Alan Shepard and Neil Armstrong and Gene Cernan a little later, again, it was just one of those things that they happened to be in my life, and they all three affected me. And so that was when I decided I wanted to be a pilot. And I was already in the Navy, of course, because I was in the Navy the whole time I was up at Purdue. But I decided on piloting, and I applied for it, and I was selected. And so off I go into flight training, starting down in Pensacola, Florida. And then I had a good run. And then, I'm giving you a really long answer. Would you rather do it in short pieces?
Keep going. Interesting.
Well, so when I left Purdue, I had two engineering degrees, and a master's and a bachelor's in basically metallurgical engineering, material science. And so I got into naval aviation, and then I decided, well, I want to be a test pilot. And so I applied. Remind me to tell you about the rule of threes here in a minute, too. But I decided to want to be a test pilot, so I did that, and then that sort of led you to being qualified to be a shuttle pilot over a period of a few years. And so that's how I ended up at NASA after a wonderful career in submarines as an enlisted guy, and then on aircraft carriers as a naval officer. So when they started advertising for shuttle pilots, I loved everything about the Navy and what I was doing, but I started applying for the shuttle program. Now, let me mention to you, and I tell this story to kids all the time, Michael's rule of three. It took me three times to get into Purdue, to get into that scholarship program. Three times. It took me three times to get into test pilot school. And it took me three tries to get into the astronaut corps. And it was just, don't give up, figure out what would maybe what your weakness was, work on that, come back to it. And literally, McCulley's rule of threes is, again, scholarship, test pilot, astronaut. And I just stayed at it, and that's how it all turned out. And I've told my kids that. I've told thousands of kids. I've given that little speech, and the last time I remember doing it, I think, was either Livingston Academy or maybe down at Allen's or Hillham or something. But it's my story in a nutshell, actually, that you don't give up. You get as qualified as you can possibly get, and then sometime you leave it up to the Lord and God and whoever's making those selections to take care of it.
I have to ask you about your piloting from this standpoint. I've always thought the exhilaration of landing a plane on an aircraft carrier and hitting the deck, and that plane's got to stop. Can you describe what's that like?
Yeah, first of all, the only exhilaration associated with it is when you're stopped. The flying you obviously have to be a very, very good pilot to do that. And I don't have never thought of myself as necessarily a great pilot, but I'm certainly a very good pilot. And I did that 400 times, aircraft carriers, I think 100 and something times at night. And there's absolutely nothing exhilarating about landing on an aircraft carrier at night, except when you stop. And then you can be exhilarated and happy all you want to, but the rest of it's just hard damn work and with a lot of pressure. I loved it.
Mike McCulley is our guest, Livingston Academy graduate. We're going to talk about his space career when we come back. Mike McCulley is our guest, graduate of Livingston Academy, went to Purdue, spent time in the Navy, and then in the 80s got involved in the shuttle program. And Mike, probably a good idea because we have so many people that may not remember the shuttle program, but that was, is it fair to call that the rebirth of America's space program?
Fair enough. Yeah, we went quite a few years before the shuttle with not a whole lot going on, some. And then after the shuttle, by the way, there was a long gap where we were totally dependent upon the Russians before we started flying our own machines again. So the shuttle flew 130 times, a little more, with two horrible accidents that you learn a lot from, like you do in most accidents, whether it's an automobile or an airplane or a space shuttle, and you figure out what you did wrong the first time and then go back at it again the second time. And so when I went to NASA in 1984, it was exciting. And I'd been selected as a shuttle pilot. There were, in my group, there were somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000 applications that year. And they selected 17 of us.
Wow. Well,
five of us were pilots. And so it was a pretty select group. And the competition was tough. And when I looked around the pilots in my group, at best, I was just an average guy with those other pilots. I mean, there were three of us from the Navy, three from the Air Force, and one from the Marine Corps, seven, not five. And great guys, all of them there. And then for a couple of reasons that I finally figured out. I was selected first in my astronaut group to fly in space, and that was a huge honor in and of itself. And so did that.
Can you imagine? Can you remember what that was like when they first said, "You're going to space"?
Well, when you applied for the program, applied to be an astronaut, you knew that if you got selected, you were going to go to space someday. And so that was sort of a given once you're selected. Although I'll tell you, when the accidents occurred, you don't know what Congress is going to do. And it's all tax dollars. And Congress can be pretty damn whimsical at times. But that was what I wanted to do. I'd flown 400 times off an aircraft carrier. I'd flown maybe 30 different airplane types. I wanted to fly a spacecraft. That was my goal. I want to fly the space shuttle. And so, like I said, it took me 3 tries to get there, but I got there. And then when I got there, I was the first pilot in my group. There was 7 first pilot selected to go fly. And I flew 1989 a mission on Space Shuttle Atlantis, and we carried a payload called Galileo. And Galileo, if you recall, discovered the moons of Jupiter in one of the very first telescopes. And he was an Italian astronomer. And it was an awesome mission to be part of. And then got back and go back to work again in other jobs at NASA. And then we can go into the next step here in a little while.
So what is the training like? I mean, obviously you know how to pilot, but is it an extension? Is it relearning? How would you describe that?
An extension.
An extension of the piloting that you've done of aircraft.
Yeah, something, it's something different, really different. And with the shuttle, you really have 3 distinct and clearly different phases. There's the rocket ride, which is strapping yourself into 7 million pounds of thrust and going for a 7 or 8 minute ride at from 0 to Mach 25. And that's one really distinct experience. I loved it. And then you're there, and now you're in zero gravity, and you've got a mission to accomplish, and you go around the Earth every hour and a half. You see the whole world over time, day and night. You look up, and it's black, and you look down when the sun's there. It's just working and living in zero gravity in space is a truly, truly unique experience. And nowadays with space station, there's folks up there months at a time. I was up for a week, but it's still the same. And then it's time to come home, and that's a totally different experience because you're floating around at zero gravity, and in the shuttle, you turn around backwards, fire the rockets, the retro rockets, you slow yourself down, and then gravity starts pulling you back towards the Earth. And at, 50 miles up or so, you start running into atoms because you're back in the atmosphere. And then the shuttle, in the case of the shuttle, becomes a flying machine. And so you fly it all the way to the ground. It's a very steep angle. That's totally different than anything I'd done in the flying world because the landing is totally different. But it was still such a awesome, awesome, awesome experience in 3 different ways. So, I got back on the ground and I was happily get back in line to go fly again someday. And the line was pretty long because there'd been a couple of backlogs after the 2 accidents, shuttle accidents had occurred, but I was happy.
Mike McCulley is our guest. We're talking about his career in space, his career as a pilot, Livingston Academy graduate. We continue. Mike McCulley is our guest. What is the most magical part of being in space? What do you still, I don't know, what still resonates with you even these years later?
What you see when you look out the window. And I'd always in airplanes, I'd always loved looking down. I'd love what you could see from whether it's 1,000 feet up or 50,000 feet up. A big part of the enjoyment of flying for me was looking out the cockpit window. And so in the shuttle, it's a different world. And so when you look out the windows of a space shuttle, if you look out to space, it's just black with dots, and dots are stars. And if you look down at the ground, you get a panoramic view. And, you know, when we launched, for example, take off from Florida, climb up high, going faster and faster, and then you look out the window all of a sudden and you're looking at North Africa. And so you go water, water, desert, desert. And then, you know, an hour and a half later, you come back around and you look down and see the Straits of Gibraltar, and it shifts all the time. So the dominating memory for me, outside of my crew and what we did and what we enjoyed together and what we worked on together, but the memory was what I saw out the window.
When you talk to kids, what is the question that they most often ask you about space?
It's kind of funny. What's it like? Is one of the answers, or one of the questions. What's it like? How do you go to the bathroom is a pretty common question. And they'll giggle, and it's a pretty simple explanation. But on young kids, I think more than others. High school kids are interesting because they're all over the place on questions. There's a lot of them that are truly interested in technical aspects. So they'll want to know how the engines work and how much thrust that they have and what's it like to fly it. And then others will often ask about eating and going to the bathroom, sleeping, you know, just the whole idea of sleeping and living and working in a zero gravity environment. Those are common questions.
Was there any physical, when you got back to Earth, is there anything different? Is there anything you feel? Is there anything that happens from a physical standpoint to you from being in space?
Well, yes. And it's dependent to a large degree on how long you've been in space and what you did. So, for example, some astronauts spend hours over the course of their mission on a treadmill. And the treadmill has bungee straps. You hook them around your waist. So you're really getting a stomp, stomp, stomp when you're running on a treadmill. And what that does is keep your bones in the same strength level or hardness level. You can also do different kinds of exercises where you use rubber bands or rubber things for resistance. But the body certainly changes. And the more we learn, think about this for a second. You cry or you eat an onion and you start tearing up. And the tears come out of your eyes and they go to ground past your nose. So there's a gravitational flow of tears. Well, in zero gravity, when you cry or you tear up, there's no flow. And so you're not getting a continuous flow of moisture over the eyeball. And it's a very subtle thing, but for long duration flyers, it turns out you got to have some way to offset that, either head motion, spinning around. But yeah, what we've learned as we built up our experience in space is how to deal with that kind of thing, because it's important. The human body was not designed to live in zero gravity. And so you have to figure out what you got to do differently.
Livingston Academy graduate Mike McCulley is our guest. We're going to run out of time before we run out of questions, but Mike McCulley, is it our current space program and after the shuttle issues that happened, after the moon landing, in some ways it kind of seems like we lost interest as a country. How would you describe where we are with our space discovery program today?
Well, I think you're right. There is a reduction in interest. and Congress, for example, and because the space program is funded largely through tax dollars, getting those guys fired up and women fired up about what you're doing. On the other hand, guys like Elon Musk, who I have a history with, he's got tons and tons of money, and he's willing to spend it to do things. And for example, he's launched lots of satellites for the sole purpose of giving the world south of the equator far better communication. They didn't have televisions. You didn't have satellites in the southern hemisphere. And he's done a huge amount of work on giving that southern hemisphere the ability to use space, whether it's for a phone call or looking at crops or looking at different things. You can see so much from up there, and the human eye is still better than, in some areas, better than any telescope could ever be. And James Webb Telescope and the Hubble Telescope are looking back millions of light years, and that's all interesting information about the history of the, not so much the history, well, I guess it is history of our universe or in our solar system. But when it comes to humans, you still have to learn from humans. And so it's still very, very interesting and very, very active, but not as spectacularly as it was with space shuttles or Apollo rockets. And so we got a rocket out there on a pad right now that's eventually going to go to Mars, and it's bigger than the Apollo rockets were. So there's still a lot going on, but there's not the deep interest. You know, I live here on the Space Coast, just down the road a little bit from the Kennedy Space Center, and see rocket launches all the time. And back in the 70s and 80s, you'd get two or three rocket launches a year, not counting the Air Force stuff, maybe from Vandenberg. So it's a problem of sorts to maintain the interest, i.e. maintain the funding that you need. None of this stuff is cheap.
Is the future of space travel, is it private more than government?
Some of both. The government looks for ways to help Earth. The private guys like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and some of those other guys, they're selling rides. And both are important. Both contribute. So you can't say we're all in government or we're all in private. It's got to be some of both, in my opinion.
How do you feel about that idea of making it available to the general public?
I think it mirrors to some extent railroads, airplanes, where in the beginning it had a more of a government function. I mean, airplanes were all over the place, but when you started building big airplanes and expensive things, it took government funding to do it. So to me, it's a marriage of private and public to get the best of whatever it is you're working on.
We'll leave on this note, Mike McCulley. When you were in space and you were doing the work and doing the mission, did you have a moment to think about Livingston and your mom and your sister and growing up as a wildcat?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, I had told Mama, she passed before I flew, but I had told her what I was going to do and what I was going to be thinking about her. But my sister Phyllis and I stay very, very close after all these years. And I spent a lot of time thinking about my family, my children, my daughters, and what they were going to be able to do and what they were doing, what kind of challenges were out there in front of them. Jane and I have been incredibly fortunate that to have children who are interested in technologies, not necessarily space, but certainly engineers and architects and things of that nature. So it's been fun. It's the high point in my life is being a father by far. The other stuff was all good. I also spent a lot of years down here at the Kennedy Space Center as the launch site director in one title or another. And that was really a highlight of my career, to be part of a team of thousands that launched and recovered spacecraft. And I enjoyed that perhaps even more than the flying experience, which I truly enjoyed as well. But I you're talking to the luckiest man alive, and for a lot of different reasons.
It's been a lot of fun catching up with you. Thank you for this time.